This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming production or Deborah Harkness. All views expressed are solely our own.
It begins with absence and desire. It begins with blood and fear. It begins with the discovery of witches.
Welcome to episode 47 of the All Souls podcast. I'm still Ginger.
And I'm Summer. And welcome.
And welcome. Today, tonight, this episode, we'll be talking about episode 302, which is episode 2 of season 3 of A Discovery of Witches. So Summer, you had a few things to say as we were lining up here, and I said, stop. I want to record it. So what were you thinking about? What were you saying?
Well, what I was saying is that you were saying, let's just get started.
What was I saying?
Let's just get started. And I was like, no, I know. That's great. I said, but the problem is that these episodes are verbose for multiple reasons. Not only because they're trying to fit so much into this last season, it feels like, that so much happens. And so much of the book takes place in each episode that there's too much to talk about. It's not like you have one scene that goes on for 30 minutes and you're like, oh, yeah, in that scene he was just telling her how he was sad and he wanted to be a better person. Whereas this one, it's like, okay, it was a really short scene, but in that scene, all this stuff happened. And then there was another scene and then all this stuff happened. And all of these things are important and all of these things need to be discussed. It's just a lot.
You're right. And so there can be a scene that's not even very long. And so much info dumping happens that I have to pause it to take notes because I can't keep up.
Exactly.
Wait, and not because I'm trying to do like transcribe it. No, sometimes I want to transcribe a quote. That's different. And I'll pause it at any point in any episode. If there's a quote I want, just like if I'm reading a book, right? I will look at it or pause it or whatever, or highlight it, whatever. And I want to make sure, and I always, I try to always say quote. So it's clear that I'm taking it from the work or a work, and then unquote I tried to remember to say. But holy smokes, yes, there were some beautiful quotes here and I captured a few of them, but there was so, yes, you're right, there's so much happening I can keep up, yes, only by going back a little bit and hitting pause.
What this tells me is that we're no longer world building, we are just 100% on the downhill incline towards the end of this.
That's a good series. Observation, because we had world building in the first season, world building in the second season, both of them, right? Because you started almost like you're starting from scratch. And now it's like, nope, we're back home to sweet home. I'm making this up. I know. Back to sweet home, Alabama. And no, we're going straight into content, y'all. Go. And it's a little, I won't say disorienting, because we're used to getting content. However, the speed with which it moves, I'm not disoriented by the speed. I am surprised at the weight, meaning the amount. So I don't think it's moving too fast for someone to follow, but it's so much in a scene. And you're like, oh, that was a cute scene between this character and that character. You know, and then I'm like, okay, cool. And I write cute scene on the bed. Someone's doing this, whatever. And like my brain and my fingers are ready to go into the next one. And as the scene ends, it's like a line or two is said and you're like, wait a second. She just covered like 30 chapters in that line. I have to go, what? I have to go back and pause and make sure I, you know what I'm saying? And capture it somehow. Yes, it is. It's mind bending.
How it also feels to me is that in the first two seasons, it was just, let's include as much as we have to make sure that the main story is intact. And this one is, well, we laid all the foundation for everything in this book, so now we need to do everything in this book.
And I'm not mad about it. I'm happy about that. As book lovers, right? Or as readers and lovers of this series. We cannot say, and I know you're being probably a little hyperbolic, we cannot yet say that on behalf of production, like, oh, now let's include everything. We don't, of course, not everything.
No, that's,
for example, there were no ghosts.
No, that is clearly just a statement I am making in an attempt to be snarky and a little bit of funny, but it's also just a little bit true.
It's a lot of it true. It may not be perfectly true, meaning they're not going to put everything in. Obviously, everybody knows that. But the amount they are putting in is holy kismakus. Okay, let's jump in.
But it's like they're just hitting the highlights. They're just hitting all the highlights of the book. So they're like, we got to make sure to include this, and that has to come in. So we got to, and we have never had this character before. So how do we introduce him fast enough that we can get him in there and get him to start working? So it's just madcap. It's a fast paced season so far.
So this episode opens with Father Hubbard, or whom we come to find as this dude we come to find as Father Hubbard in a church. And then Benjamin shows up. And Benjamin's looking for someone, but who? And then Father Hubbard says he wants Benjamin to leave someone alone. He says, him, you need to leave him alone, or why don't you leave him alone? And that's all we get. And then we leave. The next scene is Miriam saying that verifying the genetics is all this creature genetic stuff is going well. They're making progress, but it's going to take time. And Matthew proves once again that he has exactly zero chill. He's like, we need more
researchers.
No, Miriam's trying to say, look, it's going well. We need more time. And Matthew has no chill. As I said, she says, we need more time and we need more people. And he's like, because of course he doesn't want anyone to be let in on this because protection.
I feel like this entire episode is all about Matthew saying no and then changing his mind and saying, okay, fine.
So as they leave, they're at the university, by the way, as they leave the university, they run into some vampires in the parking garage. Gracious.
I put
in
car
the
park.
Parking garage. Car park. Parking. Parking pot.
Yep. Car in a pot. They were in a pot.
In the pot. Father Hubbard was in, and a dude, another person was in the car that they almost hit. No, not quite. When Father Hubbard stepped out, I couldn't see him very well in the very opening scene. But in this scene, I saw him better. And I thought, oh, I might be getting a little blasphemous.
I'm just
Father Hubbard's looking good.
Like, the wiry like pubes on his chin.
Excuse me? Don't use words like that and try and harsh my mellow with Father Hubbard.
I'm not trying to harsh your mellow. I'm trying to say I'm glad he got rid of his chin pubes. I think that's a positive statement.
I missed the got rid of. I thought you were talking about, I don't know what to do with his chin pubes. I'm like, oh, don't.
No, I said he got rid of his chin. Don't you remember his medieval chin pubes?
He has them all over his face.
I know, but they were really bad in the medieval times. And
was it like Sam Heughan bad?
It was weird because it was like wiry and not super long, but it just kind of hung off
so
of parts of his chin.
So it was Sam Heughan bad. Okay.
Kind of.
That's all you had. It was, except it wasn't red. That makes Sam Heughan's even worse.
Right.
Anyway. Yeah. So, okay. I understand what you're saying. Father Hubbard says to them, you left something in my keeping. And out of the car.
Matthew doesn't know that.
And after Father Hubbard says this, out of the car comes a slightly older Jack.
Jack. What has that actor been in? I've seen him in stuff.
Oh, girl. Rain.
Thank you. That's it. That's the one.
He's still fine looking. Tony Regbo. He's a known quantity, right? He has a name. He's well known. But he has, just like he was in Rain, you can definitely tell he's older now than he was in Rain. If you ever followed Rain when it was on the air, he's gotten like, he's broadened a bit because he's older. And I think he's just filled out a little bit. But his natural physique is quite slim, not skinny, just he's somewhat petite, you know what I mean? On the petite side, as opposed to like Fernando, who's not a petite dude, right? You know what I mean? So by choosing someone like Tony Regbo, they never give us an age. They're very careful to not give us an age. We may get one in the future. In the books, I think he was like 14 or something like that, 14, 15 when he was turned. But here in the series thus far, unless I completely missed it, we don't have his biological age that he was turned at. But by choosing this actor, it can be kind of conspicuous, I guess, meaning he doesn't look super young, right? But he definitely, I mean, he could pass for anywhere between late teens, I think, to early 20s, if needed be.
He's ambiguous.
Yes, I think ambiguous is the right way to put it.
But I thought he was entirely too normal. When they first dropped him off, he was too like, sup y'all, missed your mom, missed your pops, it's so good to see you.
I know, right? For someone who's so troubled that he killed someone to get those thingamajigger-boobers.
I think they are relying very heavily on his physicality to show his torment. Does that make sense?
Of course. Of course. I think so. And I think that's also part of the reason. I mean, obviously he had to audition, but part of the reason, besides how he can look, meaning age, I guess any good actor could carry whatever you needed them to carry. But yes, he's definitely able to do that. We find out, this is one of those real, relatively quick and dirty kind of info dump, right? We find out from Father Hubbard that Jack almost died of the plague and Father Hubbard saved his life. Matthew is not happy about this, even though it happened 500 years ago, is not happy about it at all. 500 or so years ago. And as you could guess, if you know the books, you already know this, but if you didn't know the book, you would probably be able to guess this. Jack's story is very sad. And then it all comes out. The truth that Matthew did not know comes out. It's recapped for us that Diana had given Father Hubbard a drop of her blood and in return asked him to protect Jack in return. And he did.
Now, to them, it happened 3 days ago. But to Jack, it happened hundreds of years ago. So this has been his state for hundreds of years. So while Matthew shouldn't be able to be that mad at it, and I'm just going to say that because it just happened 3 days ago. So it's not like she held it from him for
<That's>
centuries.
<true. laughs>
You know what I mean? It just happened.
And Father Hubbard says something that, I do understand what he says. And he's not wrong. Father Hubbard says, he was your responsibility, Matthew. You made him mine. So I think that is true and not really true at the same time as being true. Does that make sense? So he's not wrong that he originally was not Father Hubbard's responsibility and then he was. So that part's true. But Matthew was literally kept out of that knowledge.
Correct.
So it really wasn't Matthew's fault, the whole thing. As Matthew said, he's like, I left money with so-and-so and that would be enough. He's like, it wouldn't have brought him back. He would have died. Like, they're the only way to, like,
money doesn't stop a plague, people.
No people. So Matthew's pissed about Diana's blood and he's upset about Jack. He says about himself, he says, quote, I chose to die rather than be without my family. And Diana asks him if he's sorry he survived. He says no, because then he wouldn't have met her. So I think he still has no chill. I don't think Matthew will ever have chill. His character does not have chill, right? He just does not. But in this subject matter, maybe he's slightly calming at least down for a tiny bit. Because this is, even though we already know this, if you remember back to season one, we know that he he did not like spring off the thing, but he fell slash maybe didn't try to keep himself from falling in the church that one day in France. And because his wife and child had died.
I mean, nobody saw it. It's assumed that it happened.
He fell on accidental purpose. Who knows?
Right. They found him on the ground.
Not dead.
Not dead, but also
but dying.
Not survivably alive.
Yes. And that is when Isabeau
made a decision. Yes.
Yes. And so he chose. Actually, I take it back. It's not a mystery.
Every time you say nada, I think you're saying no.
It's not a mystery. I quoted from the series. Quote, I chose to die rather than be without a family. He's telling us right there, I chose to take my own life, period. So all that back and forth, nah. He did. He chose to do it, but he didn't do the job all the way. And then Isabeau stepped in. He's glad he survived because otherwise he would not have met Diana and we wouldn't be here where we are now.
And we wouldn't have so many things to worry about.
From there, we shoot to Venice. Satu and Peter Knox are having a chat about the three missing pages from the Book of Life that Kelly had ripped out. Satu, who now knows she's a weaver, won't work with Knox. And they have some words. And she says, regarding Peter and Gerbert, she says, quote, men obsessed. She calls them basically men obsessed with power, Knox and Gerbert. And she says, no, I'll work alone. Thanks.
Yeah. She's like, you need me. I don't need you. You always needed me. I never needed you.
Flashback to London. Phoebe and Diana have been researching the three missing pages together. And she fills Marcus in. So This is the scene is with Phoebe and Marcus, but she tells them about what they've been doing. She suggests that the three pages were maybe likely hidden in a different book of D's.
That would be
a great place to hide them, right?
I know. And it just sounds bad when you say book of D's because I'm thinking it's a book full of D's.
On my page in front of me, I have D-E-E apostrophe S. So you go where you want.
I don't care how you spell it. It sounds the same.
Dear listener, a book of John D's. Is that much better?
It's better than John's D.
Oh, goodness. So that's Phoebe and Marcus. Mm-hmm. And then we learn that Matthew, it's not really anything to learn. We already kind of could have guessed this. Matthew's feeling very guilty about Jack, but Diana is a 21st century witch, which something's going to have to change. He's going to have to like lighten up a little bit.
The thing he needs to remember is that while he knows the past, he does not know the future. And he does not know how everything plays out with all of these new variables. So pretending you're the smartest person in the room, when in actuality it's Phoebe right now, you should, you know, take a minute and think about that and stop trying to just be overall just the smartest person in the room who knows everything and takes care of everything. Why don't you share the load? That's what everyone's been asking you to do all these years, really.
Yep. And it's only when he shares the load that the series can end. Successfully, dude.
Is that your goal?
No, I'm just saying. It's just funny how that works. So Matthew needs, I told you, he has no chill. He also has a very firm grip. He does not ever chill out and he never lets go. So Deborah works with him to get to the end. So Matthew needs to go to the university with Diana and do sciencey things and whatever. And he steps into the room where Jack is, or Jack's room, whatever that is, to have a chat and let him know this. And we see Jack drawing in a journal. And he asks him, why didn't you want me to become a vampire? And Jack says that he knew that if he became a vampire, he'd have a chance to find them again. And then as Matthew leaves, the camera is over Jack's shoulder and he opens up the beginning of the book, the left-hand side of the book, the cover of the book, whatever, journal, book, diary, I don't care. And we see that Jack has the miniatures.
Yeah. See, like I said, they're giving all the goodies away in the front end, in the first.
Like hot monkey magic. Yes.
There is no chill. We are 100%.
Well, that's
full
Matthew.
Speed.
That's Matthew.
That's right. But we are also, this series though also is no chill when I say we are hurtling.
Season three has no chill.
No, season three has no chill. We are hurtling towards the end and they want to, and we're fitting everything in we can.
Nooks and crannies be damned. Or no, nooks and crannies. We'll
fill those
nooks
in too.
And crannies, we will fill you.
You'll be filled.
I'll fill you up as strong as Matthew's D.
No, book.
I said book.
Oh, I need a palate cleanser after that.
Summer, you're the one who brought it up. Anywhoozle, back at the university, Chris and the people, and Chris is like, we need more DNA. We only have like three samples. That's great, but we need more to compare and contrast and all this stuff. And so from that, Matthew, I believe, says Marcus needs to go to New Orleans to get more DNA because he's got family.
Let's go back just 1 second. I think sure. An important thing to state from the scene between Jack and Matthew is that Jack says, I don't want to talk about where I've been. Let's have a clean slate. And the reason he doesn't want to talk about where he's been is because he doesn't want to tell them that he's been doing all these horrible things or his blood rage.
Now that's true, because what Matthew might take that phrase to mean is like, I forgive you for leaving me, let's start off clean. And while that's not untrue, it actually, like you said, it has very strong meaning, probably even stronger meaning on Jack's side, for let's just forget everything that happened until this day. So Chris says they need more DNA. Marcus needs to go to New Orleans where he has family, which we're talking about it. Again, we're getting more info here about Marcus's background than we have in a long time, or maybe ever in the series. Matthew does not want Chris's team of researchers to study them. He says it is too dangerous. Someone in my family has been there. He mentions Philippe, how his father was captured by the Germans and tortured in the name of medical science. He's like, you don't understand. Chris is like, hold up.
I think the thing that Matthew needs to remember, and clearly doesn't, is that he's already been trying his way the silent, don't tell anyone about it. We bring no one in on the secret way to cure blood rage and whatever else and figure out why the creatures are declining on his own with just Miriam and that thing. And they've made no leeway.
Yeah.
He needs to try different things. His approaches have not worked.
It's not just different, although different will also help. It is expanding what he's doing. So he has had the right idea. And by opening up and including Christopher, that was probably a little bit hard for him, right? He didn't, he acknowledged they needed help, but he could trust him because Diana trusted him. And now he's being asked to, again, no chill, he's being asked to expand that circle of trust even further. And he's like, look, I just gave you Christopher. No. So yeah. So after he's like, no, you don't understand. Chris is like, yeah, you know, I kind of do understand. I'm a Black American, a Black man from the American South.
I was like, you chose the wrong one, Matthew. You chose the wrong one.
So Chris is also right. The creatures are one. He gave like three different examples and I only got down one. They're like one genetic test or home ancestry.com test away from someone else getting their DNA already. So Diana and Miriam agree. Yes, we need to trust these other researchers, even if they are like 12.
Well, and it's not even them. It's like you think about the way DNA tests have been used recently, where they found the killer in Northern California who'd been like on the down low since for like 40 years. Like, that's insanity. And it wasn't even because he put in a DNA test. It was because a member of his family did. So it doesn't even have to be you. Everyone in the entire society is going to be affected by that one person who doesn't know and tries to send it off and figure it out, or who's a carrier for the genes. That's all just going to be, you know, exposed to everybody.
Scene change. Back at the house, Jack and Galloglass are hanging out when Baldwin appears. Baldwin wants to speak with Matthew.
Galloglass can babysit me anytime he wants.
He can babysit me. He can babysit on me. Like, I don't care.
I can sit on him. I mean, I'm open to all.
We're not picky. Just not together because we're sisters.
Yeah, we don't do that. It's not that kind
don't.
Sister.
So
not that
he wants to speak with Matthew, but Matthew's inside the hoose. He tells Jack, Baldwin's like, who's that pipsqueak? Tell him, you know, get to F, basically. Tell him to get out. Jack actually is going to go to F, but as he's walking by, he like twitches and his blood rage comes out and he doesn't take well, I should say the blood rage doesn't take well to being commanded or not treated nicely. It's very triggering. Baldwin notices him as one of Hubbard's strays. And as I said, the blood rage breaks out and he attacks Baldwin. Meanwhile, Dana and Matthew are chatting about the research that's being done or going on as they lie and snack on the bed upstairs. Matthew hears the fight with his vampire super hearing and runs down. And he sees Baldwin now has a hold of Jack. And Jack pleads. He says to Matthew, please tell him I belong to you. Tell him I belong to you. Baldwin bites Jack and gets the history, his history from his blood. And Diana, because she had come down to Diana, which throws a chain around his neck and says, take your hands off my son.
Exactly. Don't piss off Mama Bear.
Matthew confirms that Jack belongs to them. Diana finally releases Baldwin from this spell. And now Baldwin knows that Jack is the blood rage killer. And he throws all the evidence of the pictures and everything. He's like, this is his work. And he does that. And then he turns and leaves. Well, before he leaves, once he does that, now Matthew and Diana know that Jack is the killer. Baldwin says, you know what has to be done. Like, there's like this. Do I even have to say it? This has to be done. And it's your responsibility. Matthew. Wow. I think the first time, other than maybe a teensy, and I mean teensy, not huge bit in season two, Matthew doesn't, there's a little bit of chill here. Matthew chills a little bit. He, for his sake, for their sake, for Jack's sake, he humbles himself slightly. And by that, I just mean he's trying to save Jack's life. He's trying to appeal to the head of his house because he knows this is how this
that
works.
That must have been the most distasteful thing he's ever done.
Yes. And he kneels in front of Baldwin and he says, I swear we had no knowledge of Jack's actions. Totally the truth. Baldwin actually calms a bit and he hasn't changed his mind, but he's more sensitive now. He's like, he must be killed. Otherwise, this could ruin our family. So Baldwin acknowledges what Matthew is doing, has done. He believes him. He is no longer threatening him. He is just saying, you have to do this. It's not about what I want or what you want. This could hurt our family. The congregation will find out. Like, our whole line could be, you know, detached from the congregation, destroyed, who knows. So after this, Jack super speeds away, and Diana and Baldwin, of course, too, not super speeds, but Baldwin's also gone. And Diana asks, or maybe begs, I don't know that she was all beggy, but it definitely was, would have fit a beg. Diana asks him not to kill Jack.
I feel like everything is Baldwin's fault. Indirectly, even the good things. Matthew didn't want to form a scion. Well, then Baldwin forced his hand and now he has to have a scion. And so now Baldwin's, the Claremont family will have significantly less people in it. So he has less people to rule over, right? And everything that he has done to this moment has propelled them towards what they need. But, you know, also it's his fault. So he has no one to blame but himself when things don't go so great for him at some point.
Then we are back with Father Hubbard. And they're talking about, like, okay, why did you keep this from us?
Can we talk, before you say this, don't you think this would have been an important story to tell?
The blood rage?
No, his parentage. Because if he told them that his father was Benjamin Fuchs, when you drop off a blood rager, you don't not tell them it's a blood rager. That's like you saying, okay, here are the grandkids. And then not telling them you just fed them 4 Cokes and like 30 pieces of chocolate. So they're going to be wound up and crazy for their whole rest of the night. These are just important things that should be, you know, cleared out ahead of time. You shouldn't just drop off a gift at somebody's house that may or may not explode and try to eat them.
Yeah, it's interesting that not a word was said. Maybe he hoped because he had kept it in, or helped a little bit keep it in check-ish, or he knew how to keep, how it was to be kept in check, that it was doing okay. I don't know. So let me describe the next little scene, and then I have a question. So, well, actually, the question will have to come in the middle of it because I think I wrote things down wrong. Okay, so with Father Hubbard, he explains, he's like, you know this, Matthew, the blood rage recedes if, and he's talking about Jack, but he's, you know, Matthew has it, so he knows, the blood rage recedes if the person is kept calm and happy. So we learn that Benjamin Fuchs is Father Hubbard's sire, which makes him, Father Hubbard, Matthew's grandson. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And Jack is Matthew's great-grandson.
Yes.
Got it. So Benjamin hoped Father Hubbard would stand with him. This is why he made him. He had hoped that Father Hubbard would stand with him against the de Clermonts and their allies. But he ended up not having the blood rage. He was a carrier, right. But he wasn't an exploder, I guess. He was a shower, not a grower. Even that doesn't work.
He was afflicted, but not affected.
There you go. That's even better. He was a flicker, but not a flecker. A fecker.
Wow.
Sorry, I'm trying to make it cutesy. It's not cute. Then Benjamin saw Jack with his blood rage after he'd been turned. And he's like, I got my man. And he is the one who taught Jack everything, to be everything that he was, meaning blood rage and killer wise. And that's bad enough, right? That's bad. That's awful. But what he used, and we get an example of that in the email at the very end, the way he taught him, or not lured him, but basically manipulated him into doing these things.
Brainwashed.
It was complete. I don't know if gaslighting is the right word. I don't think gaslighting is the right term. No. It's not the right term. Complete emotional manipulation.
He was brainwashed.
If you become what I am going to try and help you become, you will prove to Matthew that you're worthy of his love. Effing disgusting. It's disgusting what he's doing, right? Teaching him to be a murderer. Like, that on its own would be bad. Ugh. But to do it saying that...
They won't love you unless you do this.
You know what was not on screen. You know that, and I'm obviously, I'm not saying anything was ever filmed. I'm just saying off page or off screen, you know what is being implied is that if he did the things that he did on the video, which he obviously did, he was also saying, if, for example, probably the first time or second time or whatever, whenever Jack would have relented or said, no, I don't want to do this, all Benjamin would have had to say is, that's why he left you. That's why they left you. Because they knew you would be nothing. So just, it's just so disgusting what what he did to him. It's the killing and the murder. And that's bad. That's probably the worst, but just as sad. It's worse because it involves other people like that. You know, they're not involved at all. The innocent people who are killed are affected. That's not good. That's worse because you're affecting other people's lives, not just the one person you're abusing, which is bad enough. But then on top of all of that, the emotional manipulation is just disgusting. It's all gross. So at home, they discuss how there needs to be another way. They're like, Diana says, we can't kill Jack. Diana wants to keep Jack safe until they can get a cure for the blood rage.
Well, and Sarah even was like, isn't that what you're working on right now? Why are we doing this?
And Matthew says, but he'll be killed by the congregation or Baldwin or someone else.
And no one will be as gentle as me.
Well, that, and also we're probably not going to get the cure soon enough, right? So right. Matthew says to save Jack, he'd have to disobey Baldwin, the head of his family. Diana says, okay, I get what she's saying, but this is a little bit, how do you judge? I mean, Diana's like, she's keeping it real, but also talk about emotional manipulation. It's a mama bear. I don't blame her. But Diana says, quote, a father protects his children, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, damn, Diana, you, whoo, girl, you are not trying to guilt trip anyone, are you?
I mean, is it really a guilt trip if it's true?
It can absolutely be both.
Okay.
Matthew's like, he goes to find Jack. Phoebe and Marcus. Marcus is explaining to Phoebe that every vampire who shows signs of blood rage, as the congregation has made this pronouncement or this order, every vampire who shows signs of the blood rage is to be killed. And back in that time in New Orleans when Marcus had all these babies out there, he talks about his family and how many of his children were killed by Matthew. And Juliet, I think, too, right? Who's gone now. But so we get that little nugget there. Then we're back with Matthew. He's out looking for Jack in the dark and he finds him like under a bridge or an overpass. Is that what it was?
It looked like a parking garage or an underpass or something. But what I do want to say is that from that moment, we all need to understand exactly how little privacy they actually had at Septor. None. Isabel heard everything. I'm like, every vampire in that entire, the inside of the vicinity of that castle knew exactly what was going on in every room at any time.
In the whatnicity?
In the vicinity.
Okay. I knew what you were trying to say, or what you meant to say. And I did hear vicinity, but it sounded like in the hint. Something in the vicinity. I was like, wait, how do I make... I know what that word is supposed to be, but I can't make it out. But yeah, I got it. And Jack admits that he stole the miniatures. Quote, I had to kill a man to get them, but it was all I could find of you. Unquote. And then he says a little bit later on, quote, when I realized I didn't have control over myself, I didn't want to live anymore. But Philippe told me to wait for you. Whew, I'm going to get a little voice catch here. That makes Matthew pause. He's all, anything involving Philippe is going to make all of us pause. Anyone who, you know, we're on the Matthew side, right? Who's your monkey? So, ooh.
Philippe's the only one, really, who knows.
Oh, yeah. He is an abs. Oh, God. It gets me in the feels. Yes, correct. He's the only one who had all the knowledge back then, all the knowledge that was possible of having back then. So, yeah. And now to have the voice of Philippe basically come back at you 500 years later. Oh, so that makes Matthew pause. Basically, Jack says that Philippe said you would be the one to teach me to ignore what my blood is telling me to do. So they get Jack.
He says the boy had no evil in him. When you were a boy, there was no evil in you.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, wasn't he a pickpocket? Isn't that a little evil? Just a little bit?
I don't think it's evil. I think it's survival.
No. Okay. And then he said, I'm not the boy that you knew.
He's safe. And the next scene or the continuation or the finale, whatever, the end of that scene is Diana welcomes them home the next morning.
But Matthew's face, man.
Oofsla boofsla. Yep.
Like, it said so many things in that one look he gave her. One of the things being, okay, we're starting a Scion.
Okay, Fernando and Jack. Matthew told Jack that Fernando taught him to control his blood rage. Matthew, hold on. I'm going to follow my train of thought. Hold on. Matthew told Jack. Okay, yeah. So they're having a chat. And Jack says to Fernando, Matthew told me that you taught him to control his blood rage. And Fernando says, it's not easy to control. I helped him learn that he could pause and consider and like just, you know, pause before he did the thing or continued to do the thing.
Do you realize what he just suggested to him?
Huh?
To be mindful.
Yes.
Mindfulness. He literally just suggested mindfulness as a cure to blood rage.
Yep. Which is kind of funny.
That's like breathe. Take deep breaths. Breathe in and out. Box breathe. What all the things they tell you to do in therapy?
Yes, yes, yes.
that's what's going to cure blood rage, guys.
Gigi comes in and says that Diana is also there for him. She'd do anything for him, meaning Jack. And Jack has walked out of the room after this, and Fernando catches... Actually, Jack may have left earlier. The important part is that Gallo Glass says, I believe, to Fernando. But Jack may have been in there. I did not write that part down. That Diana is also there for him. She'd do anything for him. Fernando catches something in Gigi's face and or voice and says, don't let Matthew know. About what? About your feelings for Diana. Here's another episode. It didn't hit me till we said it twice now. This is the third time. And I think it comes out. Oh, I think it may come out again, but at least this is the third time. Philippe is all over these episodes. I'm telling you, Philippe is not gone. He's never gone. He's gone, but he's never truly gone. Gallo Glass tells us that Philippe charged him to look after Diana. And he says, quote, I've spent her whole life keeping her safe, unquote. And Fernando gently says, and Diana's with Matthew now. One day, perhaps soon, Gallo Glass, you will have to walk away from her. And Gallo Glass says, I know. But not today.
And they haven't introduced me into that world yet. So it's not going to be until that happens, Gallo Glass. I'm sorry. And I know everyone's thinking that. He's just waiting for the right girl.
Yes.
But Fernando was just spitting truth, like right and left.
He's like our truth serum. Yeah, he's our truth bomb. Ooh. Back in Venice, Domenico goes to see Gerbert. And Gerbert has this little page out. I'm like, wait, is it a fourth page? What's going on? Did they change the story on us? No. It's the de Clermont family tree, pedigree. And Gerbert says, do you see something wrong in that? Something is missing. Enter Benjamin.
Mm-hmm. But that tells me that Domenico knew who he was because he's like, I thought he was dead. So he was clearly, he knew who he was and has always kind of known who he was, but just they've met before. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. So they met before because if you remember, I think it was early this episode. It could have been last. It could have been 301. Benjamin was a trusted human, right? Before he proved that he could not be trusted. Mm-hmm. And thus he was a known quantity. He wasn't secret. There was no secret. Benjamin was a human that was working with the congregation. With Matthew, at the very least, at the congregation, potentially at most. And he, because the congregation, right, or at least the vampire part, I mean, not all the time, like they can go outside in the daylight. So I'm not saying they can't go out. But because they, you know, have to kind of, pretend to die every 100 years or 50 years or whatever they choose to do, keep up their lives in a certain way, right? They have to be careful about kind of where they go when sometimes. It's always helpful to have human friends in different fields on different continents, right? All over the world. And some maybe, you know, a human you get a little blood from. I don't know. So who knows? But they always will have human helpers. It's just in some capacity. I'm not saying that Benjamin was one of a human. He was a human helper in some capacity. I'm not saying he was like a lackey or whatever. But at some point, he proved himself untrustworthy. He was going to basically out them all. And so Matthew turned him, and he thought just by turning him would mean that he wouldn't then out everyone, because if he had to out all the vampires or the creatures, he'd be outing himself. So he turned him as a protective measure. That's what we're told in episode 301, I believe. And what happened was he developed the blood rage, and Matthew abandoned him, right? Which is the worst thing you could have done. He hoped that he might, destroy himself someday or be killed. So he... I don't know if he was ordered by the congregation or anyone like that to kill Benjamin at that point. Maybe he was and he just didn't do it. I don't know. That would have been the first time that he disobeyed an order. Who knows? But whether it was when he was still a human helping them out or after he was turned, it doesn't surprise me that Domenico, or wait, who did I say went? Domenico. It doesn't surprise me that Domenico would have been aware of him. And definitely, of course, not Gerbert. Doesn't surprise me about Gerbert. But we find out here at the end that he's in cahoots. I almost said cahooties. We could say that. That's fun to say, too. He's in cahooties. He's in cahooties with Gerbert because, obviously, they're both bad dudes. They both want to bring down the de Clermont, the Clermonts. So the first time I watched this, actually, no, the second, first and second time I watched, and even as I took notes, I thought what Gerbert was alluding to when he said something is wrong. I was thinking, like, what, is Jack supposed to be there? But no, it was Benjamin. Mm-hmm. Because enter Benjamin. Back in London, Matthew and Diana are sitting on the floor, next, leaning back against the bed, chatting. There's about to be a new scion in town, y'all.
The travel times for characters getting from a place to a place to a place to a place would only work in Europe. If they had placed this section, like they cut a whole bunch out, they could not have globetrotted this much if they were in the United States.
Oh, heck to the no. Of course not.
Because, like, what's his nuts? What's his name? Hang on. Benjamin was in Germany, then he was in London, and now he's in Venice. Like, and it's only been like a day, like 3 days. You couldn't do that kind of travel from the United States if you included the United States. And
there's about to be a new scion in town, yo. And Matthew says, it's going to be hard.
Well, you know what I thought was weird?
Huh.
I thought it was weird that they were already talking about going to New Orleans for blood samples. They didn't need to do that if they were going to have to go there to get them to sign under the sign anyway. It just seemed like an unnecessary additional layer.
Well, they were already going there to get blood samples. And while they're there, they may as well get their permission or their agreement to join their scion. Say, look, if we're going to do this, will you be with us? Okay, great. Before he leaves for New Orleans, he says to Diana, I need your help, dot, dot, dot. And we find out what that is. The help is to introduce the young student researchers at the university to the concept of creatures. And I reminds me of, which All Souls was it? It was the second one where we saw episode one, right? So anyway, so him saying that just made me laugh because, like, we all had to sign him that one day time. So Christopher's like, we remember, y'all, you signed NDAs. And then he outs the creatures, except for the demons. I was curious, not that they didn't have them. Obviously, I know they didn't have any there that we know of, that they knew of. But it's interesting. And maybe they didn't need to specify that for it didn't really affect their work, the new researchers' work. But it would have been interesting. It's interesting that they didn't at least mention the demons. Okay. So as he's packing for New Orleans, Phoebe asks Marcus how many children he has. And he says 5 living children. And none of them will be happy to see Matthew, he says. Well, that's understandable. And then the people who are leaving, they get in the car and they take off. And at the airport, Matthew confronts Marcus and says, I need your support. Marcus replies, find a cure for blood rage, repeal the covenant, defy the congregation, and build a scion. Then I'll forgive you.
No big deal. Just a couple things.
For all of it. Right. And then Benjamin, ringy dingy, calls Matthew and says, check your email, Pops. Oh, no, it's not his Pops. Grandpops. It's a video of Jack doing some bad things. And of Benjamin emotionally manipulating him to do it.
It looked like it was the 80s or the 90s. So that implies that he would look like grunge. And it was an automobile, which means it had, and plus because it was a video, it had to have been taken recently.
That's true, so because either, so was it in,
either he just found him recently and has started doing or
that's interesting.
It was just, you know, reinforcement.
Because they felt they needed to do this, right? They wanted to have this video in there to send an email, blah, blah, blah. Because they felt the need to do this in the show. They obviously couldn't go back too much further than the technology was available.
Correct.
Because it wouldn't happen. So yeah, so no earlier than likely the 80s, right? 80s, 90s. Number one. That's a limitation on when you can get this scene. Now, we have no evidence and there's nothing in that scene that says it was the first time he did anything.
No, but it was right? implied like he was talking him into it.
Oh, but he could talk. Absolutely. He could be talking him into it once every 100 years.
Maybe.
All we do know is this is, and this may not be the first time he videotaped him, but all we know is it's not genre. Period of time wise, it couldn't have been much earlier, right? That he could have been videotaped. That's all we can agree. We can all agree on that. But yes, it introduces a potential problem. Are they implying that Benjamin did not find him until the 1980s or 90s? I don't think they're trying to imply that, but that is implied by the video. Now, the video does not say this is the first time. However, it also doesn't say, you know, you've been like, he could have had something like, I've done this, you know, 300 years now, please, can I stop? You know what I mean? There could have been a line in there that could have given us some kind of clue, and there wasn't. Not complaining, just saying you're right. There's a potential problem of continuity, maybe. Because all the discussions with Father Hubbard, right? Now, we never got an age. We never got an age or a date. But at some point after he was turned, Benjamin found
him, yeah.
Correct. Now, it's possible it was just 30 years ago. Maybe he didn't find him until the 80s. Okay. But it seems a little bit convenient for Benjamin to find him just as video cameras are.
Became popular?
Well, became handholdable
yeah.
and portable, you know? So yeah, I think I'm not saying it's not bad editing at all, because you don't edit that. Like, that's not an editing mm-hmm. issue. That's a writing issue. But I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying
it just gives me things to think about that I didn't know I was going to have to think about.
Correct. It makes it a little more questionable. When did he possibly find him? And I don't think anybody believes it was in 1985. So, or whatever, 1992. I don't know. So, yeah, that's a very interesting. I did not think about the timeline of that. So it's really interesting. So let us know what you guys think, because that's the fact that he sent them a video. Obviously, the purpose of it was to instill fear, disgust, anger. The purpose of the video, we could all agree on. It's to terrorize, to confront, to anger.
I just think that video is like the vampire equivalent of like child pornography.
Oh, so wait, like snuff kinda, porn.
I mean, it's like, it's clearly.
Oh, it's definitely child.
Yeah. So it's just to incite emotions, and it's such a filthy thing. You know what I mean?
It's like sending child porn to the child's parent.
Yeah, that's it.
And that's disgusting.
Yep, don't do that.
That's disgusting. Oh, no, don't do that ever. First of all, just don't. Yeah, that's it. And then after that, or he's still on the phone, sorry. And
Matthew just says, what do you want?
I think Matthew says, exactly. He says, what do you want? And Benjamin says he wants him, Jack, and Diana all together. A family. And the way he says it is not like, these are my demands. He says it like, almost emotionally. And look at his face too. He's very like, not conflicted, but he's emotionally affected by what he's saying.
That was episode 2 of season 3 of A Discovery of Witches. Join us next time when we will be discussing episode 3 of season 3 of A Discovery of Witches.
I mean, that's what we're here for. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.